This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the November 23rd, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to welcome Jay Fritz. Jay is a program manager, program support, and analyst with OPM. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Glad to be here again.
Okay. And you a fellow brethren at OPM, but retired co-host Ray Kirk, Dr. Ray Kirk. And good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Jay. Good to talk to you.
Well, this is a powerhouse of OPM knowledge today on the other side of this mic, listening to what we're going to talk about, and maybe I can ask some questions as well. So it's open season. I guess it's the latter part of open season. It's the time of year for employees and annuitants to review their options. And who better to talk about that? I remember back when we used to go to the OPM conferences, and Ray would run them, and it was a whole new world for me, the kind of guaranteed annuities, but the opportunities and the options, still to this day, very impressive. So today's discussion, we'll talk about open season, what programs participate in open season, how you might be able to prioritize your shopping list, and what options the listeners would have. And again, I guess the last one is, what if I don't do anything? So spotlight's on you, Jay.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Let's get the basics out of the way. The first thing it is, as Bob mentioned, we are in the midst of the federal benefits open season. It started back on Monday, November the 9th, and it ends on Monday, December the 14th of this year, which means we're in the third week of open season already. So if you haven't, you know, started making your decisions and thinking about what you need to do, it's time to get going, because we're, you know, getting towards the, you know, the middle of the open season. It won't be long until it'll be the end of open season. So I just want to remind everybody that it is the Federal Employees Health and Benefits, the FEHB program for health insurance. It is the Federal Employees Dental and Vision Insurance Program, or FedVIP, for dental and vision coverage. And it's also the Federal Flexible Spending Account Program, or FSA Feds, where you can put money away for tax savings on your qualified medical expenses. And we also throw out our usual reminder that it is not FEGLI, the Federal Employees Group Life Insurance Program, and is also not open season for the long-term care insurance program. So I get some of the basics out of the way. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Jay, when you talk to folks, or when you interact with, I guess, groups within the federal government, what do you find that you're surprised that they're somewhat unaware of?
I think one of the things they're unaware of is, I think it's kind of all the materials we have out there that we prepare. And OPM does a lot of work to prepare for open season. We do a lot of work on our website, and I'll get the plug in for the website right now for open season. It's www.opm.gov/open season. where we have all of our resources available. So I think it's a lot of work in preparation. It's also a lot of work that our contracting areas do to negotiate the benefits and rates for the plans for FEHB for 2021. And it's a lot of work that we do. It's kind of behind the scenes. People don't really see it. A lot of time and effort put in by staff at OPM.
I remember not long ago, we were doing the show, and I think I asked you, when do you start preparing for next year's open season? And I believe you say, we already started.
You are correct. We have already started. And as soon as we're done this one, and we're not already done this one, there's still some things we're working on, tweaking the website, et cetera. But yeah, we've already started work. Everyone's now thinking 2021. I'm thinking 2022. And, you know, we're already starting to do some debriefs of our teams that we put together for open season this year. We're also having a deeper dive into some of the things for open seasons, some ways to kind of make our lives easier, and some things we can kind of work smarter rather than harder at OPM, which we like to do. but we've already begun prep work, and it won't be long. We'll be kicking off our annual call letter, go out for 2022 benefits sometime in January. We'll start working on our brochure language for 2022. And one thing we are working on, it's five-way compliance, which is for the visually impaired, which is an issue we've been working on a good bit this year, trying to make sure our website, our FEHB and FedVit brochures are in fact five-way compliant for the visually impaired. So, you know, Bob, it never stops. If we're not working on what's happening come January the 1st, we're already working on what's going to happen come January the 1st, 2022.
All right. All right,
Jeff, if we go back to some of the your website and some of the resources that are available, when I do webinars and used to be seminars and talk about it, a lot of people are surprised just how the range of information that's available at OPM. So can you kind of give us some of the highlights of some of the resources that are on the Open Season website?
Yeah, sure can, right? One of the things that we promote the most is probably our plan comparison tool. And what this does, it's you can put in various plans for FEHB and FedVIP. You can actually run a comparison, and you can look at the different plans, what they might have for premiums, what they might have for deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance. And you can actually do a plan compare and actually come out and find out what might be the best plan for you. And the other thing we do is we put the brochures out there. And, you know, the brochures are the official benefits of each individual FEHB and FedVIP plan for 2021. So we want that information out there. And also, as everyone probably knows, premiums are important too. So we also have the premiums out there for the various plans. And, you know, it's a lot of information out there. We have quality data also if people are interested in how the quality ratings for their plans are, plans you might be considering. So, you know, there's a lot of information out there. And we put it on a central location, again, www.opm.gov/open season. So it's condensed in one location that you can go there for one area and then start following the links of the different information we have available.
Now this year, when people aren't in their agencies, there's no live things. I remember the days when I was an employee that the health benefits fair, as was usually was known then, you know, it was a big event. People would look forward to all those, the carriers coming and giving out their trinkets and providing information, but that's not available at all this year. Are there any things that are going on to try to promote access to employees? Well, they can go on the website, but you know, kind of getting them to make that move to click on opm.gov/open season.
Yeah, that's something that kind of caught us somewhat off guard. I don't think anyone anticipated COVID-19. And my last day at OPM was March the 12th. And I don't think anyone anticipated it would be November and open season before we got back there. So, yeah, there are some things we're doing. A lot of the individual agencies have set up health fairs. There's also a virtual fair put on by long-term care partners. And I know we've got some agency feedback about how good that event was. As an OPM employee, our HR office put on a virtual fair last week, but they had various plans come in and talk about the benefits they offer. Now, I think that's got some wheels turning at OPM about some things we might want to do for next year because of the success of the virtual events. And one thing we did hear from the agencies is that if you're kind of in a headquarters where all the vendors come in, you're in good shape. But if you're in a regional office where there aren't a whole bunch of feds out there, that virtual fairs, people like them, because it does give a wider access of federal employees to these events they otherwise normally would not have. So it's one of the things we're going to be looking at for next year is definitely what do we want to do in this kind of new virtual world.
Well, that might be a bright side of the pandemic, that we a new way of looking at some of the getting information out to people.
Yeah, it's definitely so. It's really got us rethinking kind of what we do. And, you know, we always knew there was a kind of an issue with people in like small regional offices, but, you know, kind of like you have to take off of the virtual fairs. Yeah. This might end up being a kind of a good thing. You know, if we can expand our outreach and, you know, we're talking some other things we might want to do. You know, like we said, like what we did for internal OPM was we had, you know, various health plans come in and do like a 10-minute presentation. So there's some thoughts, maybe some things we can do with that. Maybe do 10-minute plan videos that we could put on our website that you could link to if you're interested in what, I don't know, GEHA is promoting for next year. You'll watch a GEHA video. So we're different things we're spinning around that, that we want to think about we can do.
How is the reception with people outside of OPM with regards to being able to do things online and the like? I would think initially they might be a little reluctant, but as time goes on, the power of being able to go online, you could look at this plan, that plan, another plan. What's your feedback, if any?
I think the feedback we've gotten is that people like the online. I think it's different. It's new. They're a little bit uncertain about it. But I think, you know, it's kind of like everything else. Once you try it for the first time, I think people really find that it is more useful and it does give them a lot more flexibility, a lot more access to information. So, you know, I think it's kind of, this is the wave of the future, you know, whether it's using Zoom or MS Teams, working at home, doing a lot of stuff from home. Yeah, I think, you know, maybe a little bit of an initial reluctance or uncertainty, but I think that's the way people are moving.
I used to go to the local, they would have local gatherings, if you will, for federal employees to go to, like, I forget they call, maybe they called it healthcare plan. It was hard because so many people showed up and there were representatives from the different policies and the like, but it was good to get the one-on-one, but it was hard to get one-on-one because there were so many people there. So doing it virtually, I would think, adds to the popularity. Sorry, Ray, I jumped in there too quickly.
That's okay. Well, that's just a follow-up to what you're saying. That, do you have any feedback, Jay, when they have the virtual events, how much one-on-one people actually get to have? Because, you know, if the plan gives a presentation, everybody sees it. But if you want to just have a conversation with a plan representative, how does that work out in the virtual environment?
Yeah. And again, you know, we kind of, you know, put this together, some of these things kind of at the last minute without, you know, a whole bunch of us really having an opportunity to think about it. But I mean, you do raise a pretty good point. Is that one thing that you do lose? Is that you have wider outreach of some type of a general statement or general overview of the plan, but you do lose the ability for the one-on-one conversations. And, you know, I've attended the health fairs too, where the plan reps have actually gone down to explain the benefits and how the benefits work and how benefits are paid. So I think it's kind of in flux, is that it's something that I think we have pretty good experience with it. But, you know, give us a year to kind of think about it, maybe some ways to tweak this. You know,
you
could probably improve it somewhat.
Okay. Andrew tells us it's time for a break. Andrew's very polite, and so he suggested we take a break. And we'll listen to what the sponsor of the show can do for our listeners.
Federal Open Season isn't only about health insurance. Get life insurance for less with WEPA. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fakely. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. While you're evaluating your benefits this open season, compare the costs of WEPA and Fakely. See how much you could save on your life insurance by visiting waepa.org. today.
Welcome back to the For Your Benefit radio show. This date, November 23rd, 2020. We have special guest Jay Fritz, program manager. I'm going to do it, I'm going to shorten it a little bit, at OPM. And Ray Kirk, Dr. Ray Kirk, he's a retired OPM person, federal benefits specialist, and we're fortunate enough to work with Ray doing the seminars. So, Jay, I think you had the podium before the break.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about some of the virtual fairs and things that we're thinking about for this year and the new world we live in with COVID. And as we were kind of talking about, it's that, you know, it is kind of a new world out there, and, you know, we take some time and kind of think about what we want to do for next year, because I don't think the world, I'm not sure the world's ever going to go back to previously what was considered normal. So it's kind of got us thinking about, you know, how do we work in this new virtual world? So, yeah, you know, a whole bunch of stuff to consider.
So the conferences, we used to go to the conferences, and we would be a vendor as well. I remember Tammy Flanagan oftentimes went, and other people as well. We would sneak into the different presentations. Excuse me. I'm sure we were invited, but they were just really good. I mean, it was almost like a course that you could keep a focus on, and you learned about what OPM was thinking about doing, issues that maybe had popped up, and remedies. And in a virtual world, I guess you can still do that?
I think that's what we need to figure out. And, you know, what possibilities are out there. And, you know, again, this kind of gives us more time. It's kind of caught us off guard a little bit. Like we were imagining, like, I don't think anyone expected COVID to last this long. And it looks like it's still going on. So I think we need a little bit more time to kind of digest what the different options are and the different things that we can do.
I would think it would bring out the people that would listen, and they could ask questions rather than if they ask questions in a large meeting, people aren't so at ease standing up in front of 100 people. But the questions might get better. They might get more volume, too, but the questions probably are going to be better.
Yeah, kind of a twin-edged sword there is that it's kind of your anonymous is that you might be more willing to ask questions than you would otherwise staying in front of the audience. The other side of that is I've been at conferences where it's used like a chat function and people write like a 3-paragraph scenario. That's not really a question. It's more like, you know, something takes a little bit more than a quick answer that we could give. So, you know, things we kind of watch out for that is that, you know, people anonymously will write all kinds of stuff about their situation and, you know, some lengthy scenarios that, you know, a lot of cases have to be, you know, taken back to the office and analyzed. So, you know, something else we'd have to kind of think about how this works.
Right, Jay, and this year in the virtual environment, has one of the questions that's come up in some of the webinars I've given, has OPM made any adjustments or changes in the rules about open season as a result of since everything is going to be virtual?
No, we haven't made any change in the rules. It's still the same dates and still do the same things. Everything's still working. The electronic enrollment systems are still working. Benefeds is still working for FedVIP enrollments. We still have FSA Feds is working for their stuff, websites. I think a lot of these things were done online anyhow, but no changes that we were planning on.
Are you going to have more flexibility if people come up with that sad story about, well, somehow I wasn't able to get online, or, you know, my computer system was down that week, was down on December 14th, and I couldn't make the deadline?
Yeah, you're right, Ray. I think, you know, between our years at OPM, I think we've heard all the stories. The dog ate the computer and whatever else the story is. But, you know, for FHB, we do have the belated enrollment opportunity authority by the agency. So, you know, they can grant that if you have some reason. But, you know, circumstances beyond your control. You know, I think a lot of what we see is people, they don't take advantage of open season. They don't pay attention. Here it comes that it's the last day or it's over. And it's all of a sudden, gee, I should have done something. But that's not what this is intended for. It's circumstances beyond your control situation that you just were not eligible to make your enrollment or enrollment change during open season timely. It wasn't just that, whoops, I forgot.
Right. I'm sure. I can recall some great stories about what happened.
There's some good imaginations out there. We're going with that. We'll go with that.
That's right. The speaking of open, you know, and being involved, of course, I know the reality is that despite all the work that you do to push that information out and agencies do, a very small number of people actually make changes during the open seasons, you know. So what's the overall average over the years? And do you see any difference this year and kind of any preliminary feedback you're getting?
Yeah, I think usually it runs about 5-6%. Now, it can vary based on some different things. Like I think it was last year was our first year for the indemnity benefit plan to be back in the program. So we might have had some traction on that one, people that were making a move into a new plan option. Other plans add new options. I think one of the drivers of people doing something is when we have plans that drop out of the program. So, you know, that's always, there's always plan changes. We have new plans coming on board. We have old plans leaving, adding options, dropping options, plans, FEHB, adjust our service areas. So there, you know, there's always something going on that, you know, kind of drives people. I think what drives people to take action, honest, is that they have to do something. That my plan's leaving the program. So I really now have to go out and we have to actually go out and do something this year. But, you know, kind of want to talk a little bit about, you know, people that want to make changes and what kind of drives them to make changes is with FedVIP this year. And one thing we did want to mention about FedVIP, be sure we get in here, it's that back in 2020, OPM redid their 7-year negotiation contract with the FedVIP plans. And we have now brought on additional FedVIP plans. We have increased the number of dental carriers from 10 to 12, and we've increased the number of vision carriers from 4 to 5. And what this means is there are now 23 dental plan options available across the program, with 14 of those being nationwide dental plans available to anyone that's eligible for FedVIP. And also there's 10 nationwide vision plan options available. So we're hoping to see some action on FedVIP just because there's more choices than there were before. So, you know, this is one of the things that always, once every 7 years that OPM does the FedVIP contract. So we're hoping we get some movement on that, that people got to actually look at the FedVIPs because there are some additional options that didn't exist last year. So we're hoping that kind of drives some movement this year.
And what percentage of federal employees and retirees actually do have a FedVIP plan? I actually have no idea about what that is.
Actually, it's a rather large number. I'm not sure I have the actual numbers here.
Ballpark.
Let me flip through here. Let me see. In March, actually, that you asked, right? In March, there were over 3 million, almost 3.1 million contract holders in dental plans, and almost 2 million contract holders in vision plans.
Okay, it is substantially higher than I would have guessed.
It is. And I remember when we rolled out the FedVIP, we were actually trying to guess what the initial enrollment numbers would be. And I think we all underestimated how popular it was and how popular it still is that we had this many people enrolled in FedVIP. And, you know, I kind of use myself as an example when we have these talks is that I am not enrolled in FedVIP, either dental or vision, because you know, I figured a cleaning, occasional cavity, I could probably cover with my flexible spending account money, except back in February, I had to have a root canal, which was an unanticipated expense. So that being said, with, you know, that possibly a little bit older, you know, kind of, you know, more, you know, possible dental care, then I'm going to have to give some serious consideration to FedVIP this year. So, you know, and again, it's kind of what we talk about. It's that constantly changing situation of which you're in, which leads you, you know, you may want to make a change, you know, enroll in FedVIP if you're not, or consider a different FEHB plan based on your changing medical condition. And, you know, kind of give a plug for open season. That's why we go through all this work to give you that opportunity to, you know, analyze your conditions, your family's conditions, and, you know, choose the right dental or vision plan that's best for you.
Yeah, one of the advantages I point out, or I'm not sure advantage is the right label, but one of the characteristics of the FedVIP programs that I point out when I'm talking to people, in contrast to FEHB, where while you have the great flexibility of changing plans every year, you have to maintain continuity, particularly once you retire. You've got to stay in the FEHB program or you lose your eligibility to ever get back in. FedVIP gives you the flexibility, like you're saying, that something comes up and 1 year you say, well, I'll give it a try. You know, if it doesn't work out, you drop out the next year, but you haven't cut yourself off from getting back in the next 2 years later if something happens to you.
Correct. And you're right about the FedVIP, or I'm sorry, for FEHB, the carrying to retirement, the five-year rule, have been enrolled for the 5 years of service, immediately preceding your immediate annuity to be covered. But you're right, FedVIP doesn't have that requirement. So you are more able to go in and out of FedVIP as necessary.
Right. Yeah. And then you also mentioned about one of your reasons of not having in the past a FedVIP program was the use of a flexible spending account. Again, a program that I have always been convinced is pretty underutilized. And you have a percentage on how many people participate in flexible spending accounts?
Not as many as we would like. I think the numbers that are somewhere around 500,000 people enrolled. So if you look at the programs across the board, FEHB is about 4 million or so. FedVIP, we just ran over the numbers. FSA Feds comes in, unfortunately, well behind that. And we think that, you know, and we always try to promote FedVIP, and I'm sorry, for FSA Feds. And I do enroll in FSA Feds because not to be enrolled, you're leaving money on the table. And, you know, each year I basically, you know, grab a certain amount for FSA Feds and I always under contribute. And I think this year my money ran out in August. I think last year it ran out in June. So each year I put more money in FSA Feds, and the more money I put in, the more there is for savings. And, you know, there's always that concern about forfeiture. I think that's one thing people are concerned about. I think also people think that FSA Feds is kind of a hassle. They think, and you have to file claims, you have to fill out a form. But, you know, a lot of our FHB plans have paperless reimbursement. So when I use my health insurance, it's automatically filed with FSA Feds. And, you know, I get a note from my bank that there has been a deposit into my account, and if it's my FSA Feds reimbursement. So, you know, we're always trying to promote it because, you know, people are leaving money on the table if they don't take FSA Feds. And if you're concerned about forfeiture, you know, the minimum contribution is $100. And you can carry over, now there's an increase in the carryover, up to $550 that you can carry over from 2020 to 2021 if you didn't use all the money. So there's not, honestly, a whole bunch of reasons not to use FSA Feds. You know, everyone's going to have medical expenses, or almost everyone, unless you're young, extremely healthy. But, you know, we just hate to see a lot of people leaving money on the table by not taking advantage of FSA Feds.
So FSA Feds, flexible spending account, FSA, is that what that is?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Flexible spending account.
That's what I thought. And people that can contribute to it, if they don't have any reason to have the FSA account pay it, how much can carry forward?
Yeah, you can carry over up to $550 can be carried over. Now, one thing we do need to remind everybody in order to use that carrier, what we mean by carryover, is that if you put your allotment in for 2020 and you don't use it all, you can carry up to $550 of that amount forward to 2021. But the key point is that in order to use carryover, you must re-enroll for 2021. So, you know, we always kind of remind people that, yes, carryover exists, but there are conditions for it and that you must re-enroll for the next year. So, you know, it's a lot of flexibility there. And, you know, again, it's that, you know, we've encouraged people to look at FSA Feds. And, you know, again, we just hate to see people leaving money on the table.
Right. You raise the key point in your comment there, Jay, is the necessity in FSA Feds to re-enroll every year, in contrast to what has FedVIP and FEHB, where if you don't do anything, you still continue where you are. Could you kind of go through the differences in the programs and the consequences of taking action or not taking action during open season?
Yeah, sure. Let's start with FEHB. And that, you know, you're enrolled in FEHB unless you decide you don't want to be enrolled in FEHB. And you can go in during open season. You can cancel. That's well within your right. Some things we kind of caution people about doing that, especially we talked earlier about the five-year rule. You have to be covered for 5 years of service to carry it into retirement. But, you know, unless your plan is dropping out of FEHB or your plan might be reducing their service area, that you might be falling out of the plan service area, or they might be dropping an option, your FHB enrollment continues. You don't have to do anything. Now, you know, we advise people, obviously, to take a look and see what the plan changes and benefits are, what the premiums are for the next year. But, you know, bottom line, other than one of those situations I mentioned, you don't have to do a thing, and your enrollment will continue. And the same for FedVIP. And your enrollment will continue in FedVIP. Now, I mentioned we added plans to FedVIP and added options for 2021. We did not lose any FedVIP for 2021. So if you're enrolled in FedVIP, your dental revision plan, you don't have to do a thing. Again, we strongly advise people to see if there's any benefit changes. We strongly advise people to look at the premiums and the rating areas for FedVIP, but you don't have to do anything. FSA Feds, as we mentioned, on the other hand, you do have to take an affirmative action. And that means you must re-enroll, and you do it during the current federal benefits open season. And, you know, I kind of use myself as an example. You know, OPM spends so much time working on open season for everyone else. we kind of forget about it for ourselves. So I have to consciously remember that, you know, I have to go in myself and I have to do my FSA feds this year. And again, I think I'll take a look at FedVip Dental this year.
Well, we have an email question. So if it's okay, I'm going to read the question. Okay. With regard to the FEHB plan, when I turn 65 and want to keep it instead of original Medicare, what benefit is there for signing up for Medicare Part A? Wouldn't they be my primary payer in the hospital and only pay 80% of the deductible? So what's the response there? And then there's one trailing question.
Ray, you want that one?
I'll let you do that one.
No, thanks, Ray.
That is when I ask. When we do the webinars, I say that, you know, the whole discussion about what happens when you're eligible for Medicare is on everybody's mind when they take a retirement planning seminar.
Yeah, and I believe she mentioned Medicare Part A, which is hospitalization. And our OPM's perspective on A is take it. You know, you've paid for it. I think it's premium free. If you meet, I think, almost premium free for almost everyone, I think you paid your premiums throughout your working career. So Part A is that, yeah, definitely. We always encourage people to take Part A. And primary versus secondary is going to be whether you're working or whether you're retired. So, and the general rule is that if you have Medicare and FEHB, you're employed, then FEHB is your primary, Medicare secondary. And if you have FEHB and Medicare and you're retired, then Medicare in that case will be your primary coverage. And Medicare will make its payment per its rules, assuming you're retired and Medicare is primary. And then FEHB will act as that secondary coverage, and they'll pay whatever benefits fall under their contract with OPM to pay for the hospital services. Most of the questions we get about Medicare involve Medicare Part B, which is the doctor services. And, you know, OPM has always encouraged people to take Medicare Part B, we think is probably the good thing to do. And, you know, a lot of our plans offer incentives for individuals that do take Medicare Part B. A lot of them will waive co-pays or waive co-insurance. Some are waive deductible. Some of our plans even do Medicare Part B premium reimbursement. And the FHB plan comparison tool we mentioned that early on is one of our primary resources. We've made an enhancement to the plan comparison tool that makes the information more readily available on these Medicare Part B incentives and identifies choices of Medicare Part B incentives. So, you know, it's one thing we are aware of, the issue we're kind of talking about is that a lot of questions about Medicare and FEHB, and we're trying to, you know, improve, I talked about the plan comparison tool that allow you to go in there and see exactly what benefits there are to enrolling in Medicare Part B and also keeping up or having your FEHB.
Okay, well, let me add a point to that. Is to just mention that the FEHB program does not require you to enroll in Medicare, which is different than most private sector plans, which as soon as you're eligible for Medicare, they want you off their plan and into Medicare. But FEHB does give you the option, which of course then creates the dilemma of what should I do?
Yeah, correct. You're correct. If you are eligible for Medicare Part B and do not take it, then our FHB plans will pay benefits according to what's in the brochure and their contract with OPM. So yeah, you're not required to. And you know, kind of the other thing you want to throw out there is becoming Medicare eligible is a qualifying life event for a one-time change in your FHB. You become eligible for Medicare, you might want to change plans options. So we have a one-time shot of making a change. You know, things change. Medicare, you may want a different FHB plan, maybe one that isn't as expensive. It doesn't cover quite as much because now you have Medicare. So again, something else to consider, something else to think about.
Well, I think it's time for our second break, and we'll let the listeners know about NITP, the company that does these shows with the fine help of WAPA. And let's hear about NITP.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to today's For Your Benefit radio show. We're here talking with Jay Fritz, Program Manager, Program Support and Analysis, Healthcare and Insurance, U.S. Office of Personnel Management. What else do you do?
Quite a title.
Actually, a lot of the outreach stuff. It's, you know, things that we're working on. The website, you know, we're also looking to improve OPM's website. You know, other things in the office. It's enough to keep me busy. Let's put it that way.
I like the interplay with Ray. You know, Ray's got boots on the ground knowledge and talks a lot to the different agencies and the retirement seminars and mid-career seminars. And I just sit back and listen to you two guys and I say, I wish I was a Fed.
Well, Jay, back to FSAs. Let me tell you the strategy that I suggest to people in the seminars and webinars, see what your reaction to it is the concern, as you mentioned, that people are worried about leaving money on the table. So I point out, well, one quick solution, which you alluded to, is just go to the dentist, because you can blow through a lot of money really fast if you know, you have $400 or $500 left to spend. Most a dental visit, you can probably do that. But then my general strategy I suggest to people is every federal employee should go to the dentist every October. And then if the dentist says, well, there's some kind of, you have some kind of problem, you ask them, can that wait until January? And then based on that diagnosis, you look at the dental plans, you pick a dental plan that provides good coverage for whatever need you have. And then whatever your copay is going to be, what's left after the dental plan paid, that's what you determine I'm going to put in my FSA account. Then you go to the dentist in January, run through all those claims.
Yeah, sounds like a solid strategy. Although my appointment's in January, so that doesn't quite work. But and even, you know, I mentioned I had the root canal back in January of this year. I didn't even use that for my FSA feds because all our other medical expenses, myself and my wife, burned up all the money. So again, you know, it's every year and I'm cautious too. And every year I underestimate. And, you know, I underestimated for the last 2 years. I put more money in for 2020, underestimated again. So, people want to be careful. But I think what you're right, Ray, is that there's always medical expenses out there. That there's going to be something that you're going to have medical or dental services that, you know, is going to go to an FSA Fed. And what I'll do this year when I enroll in FSA Feds, I'll pump a little bit more money into it based on last year's experience. And like I said, not even the carryover, I burned through all of it. I think 2 years ago, June, I burned through it. This year, I stretched it to August. So, you know, again, I'll, you know, use that analysis and I'll put more money in FSA feds for 2021. But
I also encourage people to go to the FSA feds website, fsafeds.com, and to look at the array of things that are eligible for FSA reimbursement, because it's not just the copay when you go to the dentist or the copays at the doctor. It's things like being able to pay for eyeglasses. And then other things that you might not even imagine would be eligible, like contact lens solution, sunscreen.
Yep.
Array of expenses. In fact, there's a website out there that the company has set up business where their products are all things that are eligible for FSA reimbursement. And it's mind-blowing to look at the kinds of things that are listed there that meet the IRS requirements to be FSA eligible.
Yeah. What I do want to do, Ray, is we've been talking about FSA, Feds, and Fed, but let me give some information out here. We're talking about them, but let's give some information on how you actually can go ahead and enroll in them. So for FSA Feds, I think we mentioned the website's www.fsafeds.com, or you can call 1-877-FSA-FEDS, which is 372-3337. And that's how you go to FSA Feds, like we were talking about, get information. I think they still have the jukebox out there where you can give like a list of the different services and supplies that are covered. And that's how you actually go to make your election. And the other one, you know, we've been talking about FedVIP a good bit here too. And the website for FedVIP to enroll is, or to change your enrollment, www.benefeds.com. And that's BENEFEDS.com. So I just want to make sure we get the information out. You know, good bunch of good information on this about the programs. Make sure people know how to do this.
Right. That's good. That's a good point, because the FEHB programs, enrollments through your agency, whatever mechanism they have, but those FSA Feds and the FedVIP program enroll through their own websites.
Correct. And for FEHB, it depends on your agency, as Ray pointed out. OPM employee, we use Employee Express. If you're payroll by the National Finance Center, it's Employee Personal Page. There's other agencies out there that have electronic enrollment systems. There used to be one called EBIS. I'm not sure if EBIS is still around. I've heard of another one called GRB Platform that I'm not familiar with. Yes. Ray, if you have any information on GRB Platform.
Well, that's a platform that many agencies, I know DOD, all DOD agencies use that, but lots of other agencies, and they provide a tool that is an HR tool that allows you to enroll in the benefits programs as well as get retirement estimates, for example.
Yeah. And again, back to our open season website information, www.opm.gov/open season. If you look under the section on active federal employees, does have a link to enrollment information. And that'll tell you, based on what your agency you work for, what your enrollment, electronic enrollment system is. And Ray, of course, we don't want to forget our annuitants. And our annuitants have two systems they enroll in. Online, it's called Open Season Online. And that's a website, https://retireefehb.opm.gov. Or annuitants can also call Open Season Express, 1-800-332-9798.
Right, and that would be for FEHB, because annuitants also, if they want to enroll in the FedVIP programs, we go to the Benefeds website. So they enroll the same as employees for that. And unfortunately, annuitants cannot enroll in an FSA plan.
And that's the next thing I was getting ready to say. Is annuitants are, unfortunately, annuitants are not eligible for FSA Feds.
Very unfortunate, because I, like you, always manage to spend all my FSA money during the year.
So, Ray, when you do the webinars and when you did the seminars, are there questions that come from the class and you think to yourself, I'm surprised this isn't common knowledge with regards to what we're talking about today?
Well, there's always questions that you're kind of get surprised that the people don't know, because, you know, as Jay realizes, that you spend your whole career, the whole day, talking to other people who are involved in program administration, and you just assume that this stuff is common knowledge, and then you talk to people outside of our cocoon, and you're shocked that what they don't know. I think FSAs are an area that people just are underutilize them, because they understand them. And I try to emphasize kind of the advantages, the concern that Jay raised, that people of losing money. But the rule change of probably about 5 years ago, where it shifted to the ability to roll over money from 1 year to the next, as opposed to using it all up in the plan year. But I just think educating people on FSAs is, and what they don't know about FSAs is always surprising.
Yeah. And I think kind of from my perspective, it's that And you're right, Ray. When you work with it every day, you're so familiar with it that what seems to be common knowledge to us, and it isn't. And that's something we really need to keep in mind when we communicate, and that, you know, it's just, we're the experts on it. And other individuals, it's you know, something they probably focus on, you know, a couple of days out of the year. But I think one of the concerns is about the retirement, not understanding that they have to be in for the 5 years. We're a little bit concerned about that. And just some other things that, you know, we're trying to do a better job of actually keeping in mind that there are people out there that this isn't second nature to them. It's not what they work on every day. That, you know, we need to kind of be more, a lot more clear and probably provide a lot more information and more detailed information than what we sometimes have.
Yeah. One of the things I was brought to my attention in a crystal clear way this year is how the basic lack of understanding some of the basic concepts in the health and in health insurance. Then my son turns 26 in February, so he's always been on our family plan. So he now works for a non-federal company, so, but for the first time, he had to actually make decisions about health insurance, and he was just a babe in the woods. That some of the, again, working in the program areas, what you think are, well, these are basic concepts. He was just totally unaware of what anything was. In fact, I made a point. I did an early new employee webinar just the other day, and I revised the format to spend the time on what I called Health Insurance 101. Just explain terms like what co-pays are and deductibles. I mean, that was all new news to my son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, and some of the other things is that, you know, our standard enrollment form, the SF-2809, which we think, you know, is kind of self-explanatory, but you'd be surprised how that form's filled out. And I think it goes back to, you know, it's hard to see through someone else's eyes. And we are so used to seeing these things. What, again, it's crystal clear to us. It's not to the layperson. And it's kind of hard to keep that in mind and to adjust to that. But, you know, it's something we are, you know, that we have learned about, and we try our hardest to make our materials clear and concise and easy understandable. But it's always a challenge.
Right. And you have some documents that I often duplicate and use as handouts in class, the fast facts, or is that, get the right phrase?
Yep,
you
know,
can you talk about them and what topics you cover with those? Because they're very focused documents on sub areas and where people can find those.
Yeah, the fast facts for open season are, again, available on our open season website, www.opm.gov/open season. We have the one fast fact is, I'm actually looking at it right now. It's our general federal benefits fast facts for open season. And what it talks about, you know, kind of what we're talking about, what is open season? What is it for? What does it allow you to do? And then it also gives things you might want to consider. You know, how many choices are in FEHB? You're not locked into your plan. There's a whole bunch of choices out there. It mentions FedVIP, we were talking about earlier. It mentions the FSA Feds we were talking about, where you can find information. We also do one on what to consider during open season. And again, it's on our open season website that, you know, some of the things you might want to consider, kind of the things we were talking about, you know, your health situation changes. Are you, you know, some type of medical expense you might need. Something that might want to consider coverage based on, in my case, the root canal I had back in January, that kind of changes some of your healthcare needs. So, you know, again, we try to put out the information out there. We just, you know, we put it out there. We hope people read it. We hope people use it. And, you know, we're always trying to improve. So, but yeah, it's out there.
Right. There's a lot of valuable information. People have to, again, go to your website, go to the open season website and walk around.
What do you find that you get in questions sometimes where you think, gee, I thought everybody knew that.
Help me, Ray. I think, you know,
I didn't mean to do that.
I think we talked about family member eligibility, the fact that you can cover your kids under FEHB to age 26. Now, FedVIP is still 22. So I think there's the assumption that, you know, all of our programs cover kids at age 26.
Yes, people are surprised at that.
And also, you know, you can carry your child past age 26 for FHB if they're incapable of self-support. And then I think there's always some issues just on eligibility. I know we get a lot of questions on common law marriage. Do we cover common law spouses? So it's kind of an array of things that we get.
Right. I think I get the same kinds of issues come up in the covering children to age 26 and the fact that they don't have to be a dependent, you know, like my son, who's not living at home. He's covered by he's working for another employer, but he's still under 26 for another couple months, and therefore he's still eligible to be on my family plan.
Correct. And right, even if he had a federal job, he could still be covered under your FEHB until
right,
he
just
turned 26.
Have his own.
Yeah.
Right.
And then at 26, he'd be entitled to enroll in his own right as a federal employee. And he could do that, you know, during the qualifying life event. His loss of coverage when he turned 26 would be his qualifying life event that he could enroll in his own right in FEHB.
Is it, are people aware of, you all talk about this like it's second nature, but somebody 26, this happens. Do you find that people, are you surprised what they don't know?
Well, I think that, you know, talking about age 26 is people, it surprises people and they don't think about the continuity of coverage. And in other words, continuing on as they, you know, child is coming up on age 26 and they don't even consider what should I do until they already turn 26. And then they potentially have a gap in coverage between when their FEHB coverage ended and they're able to get coverage from whatever their options are. I had a friend of mine that, you know, that happened with their daughter, that they just didn't think ahead, anticipate that you've got to do something in advance to have seamless coverage. Or you have that the risk of a gap in coverage and hope that nothing happens during the gap.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything that really surprises me. It's some things that kind of I wouldn't have really thought of, but I think from our perspective is that do we at OPM need to do a better job communicating? Do we need to do a better job on our website?
Is it something that
we can help the agencies with? That's where I see it.
Andrew's going to cut us off. And we'll be back next week with different guests. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.